Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. Exciting day here on the Bill Barnwell Show on Thursday, December 7th, 2017. Two big, exciting things to talk about on today's show. First off, we will get to this in a minute, but the Cleveland Browns have fired Sashi Brown, appear to be pivoting towards the video of the NFL world, which is traditional scouting away from analytics. And joining us to discuss it is longtime friend of the show, ESPN's Mina Kimes. Mina, what's up?
Hey, did you get my DM?
I did get your DM. Ruining the intro of the show, making me crack up. Dang! As the music is playing.
I sent Bill a DM trying to make him laugh as the show began. Anyways, I'm excited to be here. I have a lot of feelings to work through with this Browns thing, so I'm glad that you're the person I'm going to work through them with, being a known executive of the Browns.
Excuse me. It's tough times for me out here right now.
Not even getting paid.
It's gonna get real very quickly if I continue down this path, so I'm not going to continue down this path, except to say that, again, I am not employed or have not been employed at any point by the Cleveland Browns. But
got you with can't see, but you just winked with both eyes at once.
I sent a wink via DM. Realistically now, thinking about the Browns, if I were working for the Browns, I probably would be about to get fired, given that it seems like they are actually about to pivot away from the strategy they've pursued over the past couple of years by firing Sashi Brown, who was their de facto GM, their executive vice president of football operations. They appear to be looking at traditional general managers, and it seems likely, even given the chances that the Browns are going to go 0-16, that head coach Hugh Jackson will be retaining his job for 2018. So let's start with the general manager position. I mean, do you think there is enough of a case, given what's happened over the past couple of years, for Sashi Brown to be fired right now in Cleveland?
I mean, I think there's a case for everyone involved in this to be fired, including Sashi. Obviously, we're all bummed because this is going to be his tenure, I think, is going to be misrepresented. Like, the lessons people draw from this are going to be the wrong ones, as illustrated by KingBenny10801, who just tweeted at me, "Let's give the keys to our football team to a Harvard Law grad. Yeah, that makes sense. It's insulting to real football guys," which is amazing. But it's okay. So, like, the defense of Sashi, right? Because we know what what he did wrong. It's not, I mean, they're 1-27, whatever. The defense of him is that this was a 3-year plan, that they were never going to, they were going to wait to take quarterback, that he built up all of this draft capital, that he did acquire, make some good draft picks, which I think is true and undeniable. And that, look, this is, you know, this was the plan. Like, you're aborting him mid plan. It's the Hinkie thing, right? I don't buy that completely, because part of planning is kind of moving on your feet. And yeah, I know, I understand that looked like, you know, nobody could have predicted necessarily Watson or whatever, all these quarterbacks, but a bunch of them just went by them. And I just can't see how even having a plan and having these sort of rigid mentality in place should necessarily preclude your evaluators from seeing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, for whatever value there is in trading down and acquiring more draft picks, which I do believe there is a ton of value in that, and you look at a lot of the rebuilds and recent NFL history, and that's what they've done. They've traded down and acquired additional draft picks over and over and over again. The one exception, the one place where you don't want to trade away your draft pick, is if there is a franchise quarterback available at your selection, or someone who at least is a reasonable shot at being a franchise quarterback. And it's fair to say this happened twice now with Carson Wentz and Deshaun Watson, that the Browns traded out of those picks. And that, and Sashi Brown mentioned this earlier this year, that's not a failure of analytics, unless you're using analytics solely to make that decision, in which case, yes, that is wrong. But I don't believe that to be the case, because you've read quotes from Hugh Jackson that I actually tweeted out today. At the time, he didn't want to take Deshaun Watson. He didn't want to take Carson Wentz with those picks. He thought Carson Wentz wasn't worth the second overall selection. He thought Deshaun Watson wasn't the guy he wanted at 12 this year. He wanted Willie Hooker. They traded out of the pick, but he didn't want to take Deshaun Watson there. So in terms of, you know, the lessons to learn here, it's not that trading down is bad. It's that the Browns quarterback evaluation process with Sashi Brown at the head of that, presumably, was wrong. And I don't know if this would have worked with Deshaun Watson. I don't know that they would be a good team with Deshaun Watson or with Carson Wentz. I think obviously they would be better than the team they are now, but you're right in that it is going to be a thing where people are going to take away the wrong message from this. And even though they deserve, I think, some criticism for the things they've done that are analytically inclined, I don't think that was the biggest mistake they made over the course of the last 2 years.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, we talk about the draft, but also free agency is relevant here, right? I mean, in trades, which we all know about the botched AJ McCarron trade, which is a strong piece of data for the firing, in my opinion. But, you know, they could have gone out and picked up a quarterback this year. And the problem was that people say, well, like, how long can you tank in the NFL, right? How long can you have this window of losing? And unfortunately, you can't go 0-16 or 1-15 or even 2-14 3 years in a row. You just can't. And there was the expectation going into the season that they were going to at least win a few games and have a sense of forward progress and develop the players on the roster. And then they rolled into the season with Deshaun Kizer. And I don't know if holding on to Josh McCown would have been that much better. I mean, he's worked out in New York, and I think a lot of that all reflects on Hugh, which we can talk about. But rolling into the season with Deshaun Kizer was clearly the wrong move, in my opinion.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, you look at the quarterbacks they have on that roster. I mean, they took a chance on Brock Osweiler. That was the veteran guy they brought in. And I can't, you know, I wouldn't necessarily fault them in advance for taking a shot on Osweiler as a buy-low opportunity, given that, you know, I mean, there was, what, he was a guy who the league evaluated to be worth $14 million a year, as opposed to the guy they basically got for just paying for cash a year later. So I understand the logic there, but they messed up. I mean, they critically misevaluated that quarterback situation. And now, the idea of tanking in the NFL is one thing. Like, it does make sense to try and amass a lot of draft picks, and we've seen teams do that elsewhere. But pretty clearly, they weren't planning on going 0-16 in year two. They weren't planning on going 1-15 in year two. Year one, I think they would not have cared about going 0-16. I don't think it would have made much of a difference to them. This was a year they were supposed to improve. They invested a ton in free agency, in players, spent a lot of cash, spent that cash on Brock Osweiler, for example, improved the offensive line, spent a bunch on defense, brought in Kenny Britt. I mean, this was a thing where they really wanted to go out and improve this year. Even if it was going to be a 4-win or a 5-win team, I think if they were 4-11 or 4-8 right now, I think nobody would be getting fired and would be sitting here saying, well, they still have problems, but they're showing signs of progress. And this is, to be honest with you, I think a worse team than the team we saw last year.
Yeah. I mean, and the team last year, I believe the Pythagorean win expectation was something like 3 or 4, right?
Sure.
I don't have it in front of me, but I know they underperformed. And that's it's coaching, right? I mean, gosh, the crazy thing to me today is that Hugh Jackson getting extended was by far the more shocking development. And I'm not quite sure if people are reacting that way, but this team, this roster last year and this year, Bill, should not lose every game. Like, there are plenty of teams in the NFL that don't have quarterbacks that are still winning games, and their talent is scattershot, admittedly, on both sides of the ball, but they should not lose as many games as they have, and that's not just because they don't have a quarterback, and that has to fall to Hugh Jackson at some point.
It does seem like he deserves some of the blame. When you look at some of the decisions that presumably he's made, he has been the focal point of the decision. And it kind of raises questions about him. I mean, like I said, I mentioned the quarterback choices before. He was obviously at least part of those discussions and expressed that he didn't want those guys at the spot where the Browns would theoretically have taken those guys. That's one thing. Okay, maybe he's not the best evaluator of quarterbacks at the college level. A lot of teams aren't. That's a tough thing to do. I mean, this is a team that changed their defensive coordinator after one season, firing Greg Horton, bringing in Greg Williams. Obviously, that did not work out for the Browns after 1 year. This is a head coach that now he's benched Deshaun Kizer 4 times. I mean, he's been hurt twice and left games twice, I believe. But he's benched Deshaun Kizer 4 times this year, where there hasn't been an explanation of, okay, this is what Deshaun Kizer is getting out of this. There's been no signs Deshaun Kizer is improving because of it. There are no signs that this is a logical way to run your organization in terms of evaluating a quarterback. I mean, it would be crazy for Deshaun Kizer to have any confidence given the way he's been treated this year. And that's not analytics. That's not numbers. That's your ability to manage men, to manage the quarterback position, which is what you were brought in to do. This is what you were supposed to be an expert at. So I really don't think there's a ton of evidence that Hugh Jackson has done a very good job with the head coaching position there. I mean, there's been quotes from players on other teams about how the Browns have a ton of talent, a ton of great athletes on their roster. It just doesn't seem to have clicked. So I don't know. I can't fault them for firing Sashi Brown. I don't think he's done a good enough job. I don't think Hugh Jackson has done a better job than Sashi Brown has given the circumstances.
Yeah, this is really a desirable spot, right? For a GM or a coach. I mean, given the amount of, well, I guess not given ownership and their inability to show any sort of consistency or stick to a plan, but given the amount of draft capital they have, some of the talent they already have on their roster, I mean, you would think a really good coach or GM would be more be excited about coming in here.
I think ownership is the biggest indictment of the options they have there. I mean, if you're a top level, if you're Josh McDaniels and you're Nick Caserio, let's just throw someone out there. Do you want to go work with Jimmy Haslam, knowing that, I mean, how many guys have gotten more than 2 years in this organization to run things?
Yeah,
I don't know that it's been anyone since Mike Holmgren. I mean, it's really staggering, and I can't really fault them for making the move after 2 years if they go 0-16. And in a vacuum, I wouldn't necessarily disagree with a lot of their moves in recent past. I guess maybe firing Rob Chudzinski after a season might be the one. But, I mean, as desirable as that draft capital is, as exciting as it might be to have Myles Garrett and the possible first overall pick at quarterback, as quickly as you could turn it around, I just don't know that I would have confidence for that. I just don't know that it's as desirable of an opportunity as it would be to go, you know, coach Andrew Luck in Indianapolis.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was saying this earlier, but I look at what the Niners have done, you know, who've been in a middle of a teardown and decided not to go into the draft this season, went after Garoppolo, and, you know, they have the leverage of the franchise tag. And I question, people might not agree with this, but why Cleveland didn't do that. I don't know. It's coaches change, GMs change, owners are forever. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and I mean, Jimmy Haslam's franchise has gone up probably, $700, $800 million in value since he bought it?
He's added so much skill.
He really has made it so much better. That's the solution here, is just don't focus on analytics. Just get rich and become an owner. It's way smarter to do it that way. Anything else you want to add about this? Yeah. Is there anyone who you think, like if you were, let's say they fire, Hugh Jackson. Is there a GM you think they should hire?
John Dorsey's still out there, right?
Yep.
Probably him or Gettleman are the top two candidates, I would imagine, this offseason.
It does seem like the reason they might have made this move now is to try and beat the Giants to a particular guy.
Yeah. Probably one of those two, don't you think? I mean, am I missing anyone?
Scott McLuhan?
Yeah. Well, that brings its own set of questions, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. But do you think they fire Hugh Jackson if he goes 0-16?
This season? Yes. Haven't they already said he's going to be the 2018 coach? Although, we've seen GM owners certainly
say
aren't
lots
always
of things.
Stick to, yeah, right. No, I don't think so. I think it's so likely, right, that they wouldn't have said that if that was the case. I think they have crafted a narrative now where he is getting out of this. He is not being blamed for what happened. They are blaming analytics, and that stinks.
Well, I've got to tell you, I love working in the media. It's a really growing, successful industry. So I'm happy to be sticking around for a long time on this side of the NFL media organizational divide. But let's get to some other stuff. We have a lot of things planned for today. We're going to have to rush into some of them, I think, just because this Browns news broke as we were about to record this podcast. So we did a bit. We planned on something where we're going to hand out some Christmas gifts today. I know it's a little early. I don't want to make it denominational, so it could just be holiday gifts. Chill. This is going to be okay. We're going to hand out gifts to the 12 current playoff teams, everyone from the Patriots to the Chiefs. And we're going to give each of them one player from a team that is currently not inclined to make the playoffs. So we can't give six teams Aaron Rodgers. We can't give people Dak Prescott and Sean Lee. We have to pick one guy from different non-playoff teams and hand them to the team in question. So let's start with the Patriots. Who'd you give the Patriots, Mina Kimes?
So with the Patriots, this is kind of an interesting exercise because it's like best player available versus positional needs, you know, and where it's the playoffs. So I think we're erring towards positional needs here.
Right.
Patriots don't need anything on offense, clearly on defense, even with their recent surge in improvement, if you want to call it that. Really, it's just that they've gone back to being the same old, like, bend, don't break kind of defense, I think. They're an average defense that's pretty good at not allowing touchdowns. They're really bad at stopping the run. They're really, really bad. You know, they're 32nd in run DVOA, is that right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, so I was just kind of looking at some of the non-playoff teams for a linebacker I thought would be stout against the run. I like Zach Brown a lot in Washington. Maybe that's a little bit unglamorous. Jadeveon Clowney is another one that comes to mind. But I kind of want to give him to another team, so I'm going to give them Zach Brown.
Okay, I went in a very similar vein. I thought about Jadeveon Clowney. I went with a linebacker, not someone who's going to rush the passer. I went with Lavonte David of the Buccaneers, where I figure he's kind of going to be their Dont'a Hightower replacement. Not the Hightower we saw this year where he was rushing on the edge, but a guy who can drop back into coverage, who can make plays behind the line of scrimmage against the run, who's going to just be all over the field. I feel like they could use that player, especially given how, you know, how frequently teams are going to be throwing underneath against them in the postseason.
Makes sense.
Thank you. I appreciate that. One for one. Pittsburgh Steelers.
Sorry, I was looking for, I didn't know you did an article on this, so I wanted to cheat and look up your answers, but I can't find it on the website, which is why I went kind of awkwardly silent there for a second.
No, I'm going to go awkwardly silent, but you can't find my article on ESPN.com.
I found it. All right. Nope, never mind. It's your playoff kryptonite. This is a different article.
That's
right?
The one. That's the same one.
No, that's the one. Do you have, like, the players you would give them on it? Did you?
No, I have weaknesses for each team, though.
Okay. All right. This is dark, but honestly, now with Shazier, they probably need a linebacker, right? Mm-hmm. I started working on this before that, actually, I think. So before the Shazier thing, and I guess with a linebacker, they would need like a DeMario Davis or a Preston Brown. I wanted to give them a tight end before this because, I feel like that sort of the thing they need to take their offense to the next level is just kind of a threat in the middle. I do not buy Jesse James. So the funny thing about the tight end position, Bill, is that it really sucks this year in the NFL. Like, if you look, it's so thin, which is why I went with Evan Engram, because there's very few good tight ends, and there are very few good tight ends on non-playoff teams.
Yeah, I gave someone else a tight end later on, and it was very hard to find one. I did not go with Evan Engram. I do think he'd be really exciting there. I just think they have so many different weapons that it's kind of similar to when they signed Ladarius Green last year, where they were like, oh, wow, now there's no one's going to be able to cover everyone on this roster. And Evan Engram, I mean, he's been one of the best rookie tight ends in terms of receiving production in the past 20 years. I mean, obviously the Giants have no receivers left, but he's been really good. I, in light of the Joe Hayden injury, which happened before the Ryan Shazier injury, Pittsburgh is number one in the league on passes to the right side of the field and 32nd on passes to the left side of the field in DVOA. So I gave them Josh Norman, who admittedly, like, I don't think he's the guy he was in Carolina, but I do think he would be a shutdown corner on one side for them. And I do think that a second cornerback would give them incredible coverage ability to work with, especially after they get Hayden back in the playoffs.
I gave him to someone else, so we'll get there.
Interesting. Vikings,
scrolling down. So this is such a balanced team, man. When you really look at them and some of their statistics, it's hard to find needs. Definitely not. I mean, they're so complete on defense. It's crazy, and maybe you found a hole. But I wanted to give them a running back. I just think, you know, given how good Case Keenum is, on play action, the way that offense works. I thought elevating that position could be cool. And I really like Jordan Howard. You know, he's averaging 4.17 yards per carry in an offense where everyone knows they're going to run it every single time. So I imagine you could do even better with the Vikings.
I gave them Aaron Rodgers because why not? They're the hell of it.
But like, you can't give a team good. Aaron Rodgers.
I gave one team Aaron Rodgers. Why not? Same. I mean, I think Case Keenum is good, but that team is terrifying if they have Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, right?
Yeah, that's insane. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we don't know, right? I mean, we'll see. I don't know. I'm still not 100% convinced we're going to see Aaron Rodgers this season.
Really?
Well,
I mean, I don't know why we're taking you as an expert on Aaron Rodgers by any means.
First, they got to beat the Browns, right? Green Bay. But we'll see.
Oh, that would be so good if the Browns knock the Packers out of the playoff hunt.
It's totally possible.
Will they carry you, Jackson, off the field in celebration? Just smashing calculators along the way, just crushing them on the floor. Crushing calculators. The fans are chanting, fuck the process, from the crowd.
Wow. Yeah, FTP. All right, who's the next team?
Eagles. Eagles are the next team up.
Okay, so Eagles, another team I think, you know, people thought maybe not a lot of weaknesses, but when I rewatched the Eagles-Seahawks games, I missed it because I was in Europe and I woke up in a haze of delight, to be honest. I just literally walked around all day with a big smile on my face, but I couldn't get Game Pass working in Spain, so I had to wait until yesterday. And then I really, like, relaxed, you know, I got a glass of wine, I sat back. I watched both the 2-hour version and the All-22. Okay, so that said, the thing that jumped out at me was Vitae just got brutalized by Frank Clark in the last 3/4 of that game. So I gave them Tyron Smith.
Okay, that's fair. I went with Joe Staley, same reasons. It was great because I was struggling to find a kryptonite thing for them in my column before that game, and then how Vitae was bad.
Yeah.
Like, solve that problem. Right quick. But same idea there. Jags are up next. Who are you giving the Jacksonville Jaguars?
I gave them Matt Ryan.
I gave them Matt Ryan. One for one. We got one.
You know, there are a few non-playoff quarterbacks. I'm sure there's a couple other teams we'll get to. But, I just thought Matt Ryan made the most sense for – I mean, is there a more Tom Coughlin-y guy than Matt Ryan who, like –
Oh, man.
Like, doesn't it just make sense?
I can totally picture that now that you're saying it.
Just, like, they would vibe so hard. Like, the clicking would happen immediately. I don't know.
I just picture them, like, hanging out after practice watching Blue Bloods together in the facility.
Yeah, then, like, going to, like, a Home Depot or something and picking up some supplies afterwards.
Just getting supplies for the Jags.
And then going to Shoney's.
Jacksonville
Life. Or what's it, Golden? No, not Cracker Barrel, the one that old people like. Yeah, Golden Corral. Yeah.
I think they may be an ESPN sponsor. I think people of all ages love Golden Corral. Delicious Golden Corral.
I eat dinner at 5:30 when left to my own devices. I am in no place to mock old people eating habits. Mm-hmm. I'm hungry right now. It's 11:10 here, and I'm starving. I'm seeing that we started hungry. Late.
I'm on the East Coast time, and it's 2 p.m. to me. The New Orleans Saints.
All right, let me scroll down. Another very balanced team. I probably should have given them someone on defense, but, you know, I really think they are suffering from the lack of a deep threat, so I gave them DeSean Jackson.
I like that. He's like version of Ted Ginn. Because, like, Ted Ginn
Jr., yeah, pretty much.
Kind of quietly, like, Ted Ginn isn't really that fast anymore. He's good. He's, like, actually a better receiver now than he was when he was younger, but he's not really, like, an absolute burner anymore. I gave them Jadeveon Clowney. That was my Clowney landing spot here with Alex Okafor out for the year. I just think the one thing they're missing on defense when guys are healthy is just that second kind of great pass rusher. So I think they would be terrifying with Cam Jordan and Jadeveon Clowney.
That's probably a better pick.
I don't know. I would like DeSean Jackson on that offense. Rams.
I gave them to Jadeveon Clowney. The Rams quietly have a bad run defense. you know, which is part of the reason why I think the Eagles are going to pull it out this weekend. So, you know, Javon Clowney has been so awesome against the run, and I think having him is just going to unleash Aaron Donald, like, the Demogorgon. So I like Clowney for them.
Did you have you made that pick officially in the ESPN on the ESPN picks page?
I have, yeah. I picked the Eagles.
It's about 50-50. That kind of surprises me.
It's a, I mean, I'm not sure when if we're going to talk about like the playoff ramifications for that game, and you know, I mean, that it's so hard right now to try to balance out, like, do the playoff. Do you hear like a steamboat?
I think that's my phone vibrating.
Oh.
as I record off the phone.
Well, are you on the river right now? Like, are you by the docks recording this?
I'm recording this on a barge, so.
It really sounds like a steamboat. Anyways, I don't know. I think the Eagles will pull it out.
Yeah, I mean, it's not out of the question, but the Rams, I think, are favored, right?
Slightly, the Rams
are 2.5-point favorites at home, but just interesting. I gave them Austin Seferian Jenkins. I feel like they need a tight end. The tight ends outside of the playoffs, like you said, are awful. But I do think he's been better this year. Gives him another red zone threat. I think he's a pretty underrated player right now for the Jets. What about the Tennessee Titans?
So this is hard. I almost gave them Khalil Mack. Because they're 21st in sacks.
Mm-hmm.
But I changed my mind at the last second. I gave them DeAndre Hopkins. I think Mariota just needs someone who's going to catch everything that he throws at him. And Hopkins is the guy.
Mm-hmm. I gave them Sean Lee. I figured a cover linebacker might be good. Have a couple of injuries here or there on defense. I feel like they could use someone to kind of mop up. And I do think Sean Lee's just a super, even given that he's a known player, just super underrated given how bad the Cowboys have been without him in the lineup on defense this year. What about the Baltimore Ravens?
I gave the Ravens Kirk Cousins.
Do you think would solve their problems? Like, I'm intrigued by that one. I think Joe Flacco is bad, but I just think their offense is just a mess, even with, like, a better quarterback at under center.
I think... To me, quarterback is just the one area that they could dramatically improve. And the other option was Stafford, I thought. I don't know. I just think Flacco, aside from the recent game, has been so bad that to me, that's just where you can have the biggest delta.
Yeah, I guess that's pretty defensible. I gave them Drake Kirkpatrick, given the injury to Jimmy Smith this week where he tore his Achilles and he's done for the year. I figured they do with Marlon Humphrey, their first-round pick, who's going to fill in. Yeah, it's just a bummer. Their defense is so
good.
Such
a great season. Yeah.
Yeah, so I just want to keep them playing at a high level. I feel like their best shot is having the best defense in football as opposed to having a better quarterback. And I don't know. I would be intrigued to see if that offense would get good with a better quarterback. I just think they just seem so broken. Like, they're just such a boring, crappy offense to watch. Seahawks are up next. I want to see who you gave the Seahawks. Did you give them Aaron Rodgers?
So,
they have two quarterbacks.
So Josh Norman was tempting to me because, you know, Shaq Griffin, obviously with the Richard Sherman injury, Shaq Griffin's back. They're moving Byron Maxwell over and having him play on the other side. So Jeremy Lane, that's going to be a big area of weakness. You know, we saw him get burned a couple times, I think, by Nelson Aguilar. But I decided instead to give them Adam Vinatieri. Tell me that wasn't the right pick. Think about
that. That didn't even occur to me. That's pretty fair.
They can't, like, they don't have a guy who can reliably kick over 46 yards right now. And that so affects your game plan and so affects every, you know what I mean? Like, that is the difference between winning and losing in the playoffs.
That's a good pick.
Thanks.
I gave them. I gave them Ricky Wagner.
I tried to find a right tackle, but I couldn't find one. Yeah, the Wagner's
He's been injured, so like he's not even 100%. But I think even if he literally has his leg chopped off and he's amputated and playing on one leg, I do think he would be better than Jermaine Ifedi at right tackle.
The right side is such a problem, man, when you watch these games. Man.
I would also consider putting Adam Vinatieri at right tackle over Jermaine Ifedi.
All right, moving on.
The Carolina Panthers, we have two left.
Another team that's missing a deep threat, I gave them T.Y. Hilton.
I give them Kenny Stills. So okay. I'm going to count that as basically the same player.
T.Y.
Hilton's better, but same idea. And then finishing up.
Did you just forget T.Y. Hilton exists? Like when I got there, I was like, oh.
Yeah.
All right. T.Y. Hilton. Poor T.Y. Yes. Hilton, who has to play on the Colts.
T.Y. Hilton is a better example of the player that I chose.
Yes, no, I'm just saying he continues to finish in like top 5 yards every year, and nobody like remembers that he exists because he's on the Colts. It's
poor guy.
Sad.
But yes, I should have chosen T.Y. Hilton over Kenny Stills. Let's finish up. Kansas City Chiefs.
Okay, so defense is where I'm going. I almost gave them Landon Collins. Obviously, the pass defense is awful, and, you know, with Eric Berry gone, that's an area of weakness. But I changed my mind last second and gave them Ndamukong Suh.
I like that pick. Do you...
Obviously, the run defense has been just atrocious. I mean, the defense from top to bottom has holes, so it's kind of hard to know where to go with this team. But I just thought I went best player available.
Do you think they would get more out of Kirk Cousins than the Ravens would?
I think no. Well, I think for them, Alex Smith was really good this weekend. And it's more likely that Alex Smith is going to revert to at least an average version of himself than Joe Flacco at this point.
I think this is the average version of Joe Flacco. It's just bad. I gave them Tre'Davious White. I don't know that Darrell Revis is going to be the solution at cornerback there. It's just such a disaster. Yeah. They have every week there, you have Steven Nelson getting burned, whoever's playing off corner across from Marcus Peters. And this week it's not even Marcus Peters because he's suspended for the funniest moment of the football season so far. I think Tre'Davious White is great. I do think he's a super underrated player. He just passed the concussion protocol, so he's going to play this week, which is nice. And he's would be a really valuable player for the Chiefs. So I went with Tre'Davious White. And that's it. Going to get to some mailbag questions after the break, but we have more Bill Barnwell Show coming in a moment. Welcome back to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm joined again by Mina Kimes of ESPN, and we solicited some mailbag questions from you yesterday, and we are going to get to them now.
Let's do it. I don't know which ones you chose. So there were a lot of good ones, a lot of weird ones.
A lot of good ones, a lot of weird ones, a lot of bad ones too. But you know what? It's all good. Do you want a football one or a non-football one to start?
Let's start with a football one because we're football guys here.
Okay, yeah, it's true. We're two classic football guys. You have an ex-player on the opposite line, a former Packers defensive lineman, Mina Kimes, and I'm a man, so I guess I qualify as a football man then somehow. I don't know.
Executive on the Cleveland Browns.
That's true. I forgot about my stewardship of the Browns for the past couple of years. Let's start with Sam McBride's question.
Okay.
Let's start with Sam McBride's question about another possible firing in the NFL. He asked, should the Browns fire Vance Joseph? And just in general, what are your stances on firing a coach after 1 year?
You said the Browns, not the Broncos, which...
Oh, no.
I don't blame you because Browns and firing now just go together. Vance Joseph, huh? I mean, they're not going to fire him, right? They're not, right? Am I wrong?
I don't know. I wouldn't say it's a guaranteed no, but I guess the chances are 15%, 20% maybe?
Yeah. How often has that happened? 1 year coaches being fired? It's pretty rare.
Pretty rarely. I mean, I had to think about the last time it's happened. I thought maybe about, you know, there are situations where you have a college coach like Bobby Petrino who comes in for a year and then is like, I don't want to do this, and leaves and goes back. Camp Cameron in Miami went, I think, 1-15 and got fired after a year. I mean, it doesn't happen very frequently. Rob Chudzinski, I mentioned, in Cleveland was 1 year in and out, I believe. So it's pretty rare, but maybe once every 5 or 6 years it happens.
Yeah. So yeah, everybody's going to point to Elway and say, well, you know, they've totally mismanaged the quarterback position. How can you blame Vance? I would feel a little bit hypocritical, I guess, excusing him completely after I just railed on Hugh Jackson for, you know, having the idea that you should be able to win a few games without an NFL quarterback, and especially Denver, right, which has that defense that's horribly that's just really underperformed this season and taken a step back for a multitude of reasons that go beyond coaching and do involve personnel without getting too far into that. But I mean, I don't think. I guess I don't think they should. It doesn't seem fair to me, given some of those personnel decisions. What about you?
I wouldn't feel like it was the right thing to do. And I think the quarterback situation does come into play here, where it's one thing when Hugh Jackson was in the room during those decisions to not draft Carson Wentz, not draft Deshaun Watson. I mean, Vance Joseph inherited these quarterbacks. He didn't pick Trevor Siemian. He didn't pick Paxton Lynch. He didn't sign Brock Osweiler. Yeah. So maybe you said the Osweiler thing he had some say in, perhaps, but when the guy running your organization is a Hall of Fame quarterback, you know what? I'm guessing he's probably making the final say. It's not like Sashi Brown is picking, you know, accountants or lawyers. Like, he's picking.
Right.
John Elway should be able to figure this stuff out. So I don't think they should fire John Elway either, of course. But I do think I would want to see Vance Joseph for a second season with a quarterback who is more competent there. And I think the defense, it's bad, but it's 10th in DVOA. I mean, they're being put in such a situation to fail by that offense that I don't think any defense would look good with this mediocre offense on the other side of the ball.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't think he's made like insane quarterback. Like, I know they've bounced from quarterback to quarterback there, but there's never been a time where they've done it where I'm like, that's crazy. They should have stuck with Osweiler or Siemian. I mean, they're just all so bad, right? It's not like some of the other decisions we've seen around the NFL. So, yeah, I guess I would give him another chance too.
Paul Carroll asks this question, and I'm very intrigued to hear about this because you mentioned a story about this yesterday on Twitter. Can you guys do a cold open presentation on how to make a bloomin' onion?
Wow. Okay. So what I said on Twitter, do you want to weigh in here at all, or I don't want to
mansplain
bloomin' onions?
I don't like onions, bloomin' onions, any kind of onions. I'm not in on. So this is all you.
Have you actually had a bloomin' onion?
No. I mean, I've been at the table when.
Wow.
I don't like onions. Wow. Why would I like a lot of onions?
Maybe you just haven't had an onion that's been properly prepared.
QVC style, perhaps.
Have you considered that maybe you need to sometimes think outside of the box, trade down for a better onion? You're being as rigid
a lot of
as
onions.
The guys we rail at here. All right, so look. What I said on Twitter yesterday, so our friend Ryan Nanny was tweeting about how he wanted to be the Bloomin' Onion Man at the Outback Bowl, and I believe he gained that responsibility through his tweeting campaign. And I told him a true story, which is that I loved Bloomin' Onions so much as a child that I bought a Bloomin' Onion maker from TV and then did a show and tell in my class where I made a Bloomin' Onion for the class because I was so proud of my Bloomin' Onion making prowess. Now, my family used to go to the Outback a lot for celebratory occasions, which is why I became so familiar with the product. I also really love the warm bread they put out with the butter.
Sure.
That's another, you know, really delicious thing, but harder to make. The way a Bloomin' Onion maker works is it's like a sort of a West, it looks like a Westworld maze style situation. Like it's a cutting thing where you peel an onion, you put it on top of the onion and press down, and it sort of flowers. It blossoms, if you will. And so it kind of splits up into all these little pieces. Then you drop that into a fryer. Well, you coat it first, key step, pardon me. Then you drop that into a fryer, and then it's fried in that position. You take it out, and then all of those little pieces you can just pluck from the onion, and they become delicious, almost like onion mozzarella sticks. They're fried little components that you can then dip into a creamy, delicious sauce. It's an excellent appetizer. You can have as much or as little as you want. I cannot recommend the Bloomin' Onion enough. Far superior to the Chili's product, the Awesome Blossom, inferior ripoff facsimile of the Bloomin' Onion. Go with the original. Make your own at home, folks.
Okay, so I have a lot of questions about this. Number one, did you have a really big onion to work with? I mean, it's not the size of a normal onion.
It's a big onion, but you'd be surprised how much you can get out of a single onion. I mean, the ones they make at the Outback, I think they combine more than one. But you can do one with your own. You would be shocked how many little pieces you can get out of one onion.
Okay, so how long did this presentation take in school?
Well, there's this part with a knife, and everybody was really impressed that I was allowed to bring a knife to school. I remember that really vividly, like a giant knife. Like, there was an audible gasp from the class when I unsheathed it. I had to ask the teacher beforehand. Like eight, how? Seven or something.
You're eight. You're carrying a knife.
I had that to ask the teacher for your permission beforehand to bring it in. I remember that part very clearly. Yeah. It didn't go as well in class as it did at home, as it always, you know, is often the case.
Of course.
Had a little bit of performance
anxiety. Did other people eat the blooming onion? Like, was it prepared or was
heck
it like...
yeah, they did. You can't resist it once it's on the table, you gotta take a bite.
Did it make you jealous that other people were eating the blooming onion and you were not able
no,
to
No, that
have?
Was the point. I would never make a blooming onion entirely for myself. It's huge and heavily caloric.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, having a little bit of blooming onion is just totally fine and safe. No yeah, calories in, like, a quarter of a blooming onion.
You know, I mean, it's a group thing. It's an appetizer. It's like a party. It's like you put it out and people are delighted.
I'm so
we should move on to the next question.
All right. So Greg asked us, in the same vein as Ryan's celebratory Bloomin' Onion mascot situation, if you could be any mascot, e.g. Bloomin' Onion Man, for a day, what would you want to be?
Oh, man. You go first.
I want to be the Pelican's King Cake Baby.
Oh, no.
Yes, because you know what? It's so creepy that you get to lean into it. You don't have to pretend to be, like, a family-friendly, like, nice, normal mascot. Mm. You can just be a total weirdo and creep everyone out. And I feel like that's just, you might as well lean into it.
I really like the orange, the Syracuse orange. Does it have a name? Let me look it up.
I don't know
what I'm talking about. The
No, I don't.
Otto the Orange, it's called.
Oh, of course. Otto the Orange. Sorry.
Which is obviously just like a giant orange, right? Because to me, like, the idea of a mascot is to be as far from the human form as possible. And like, the worst mascots are the ones that approximate humans, like with the giant heads. I find those repulsive. So the cutest ones are animals or like just creatures. And so I would be the orange. So, and then you could like roll around on it. And I would be able to come up with, I think, some good dance moves. I'm looking at pictures of Otto and I could make this work.
So you're worried about an uncanny valley effect with mascots.
Yeah. Isn't it disgusting when there's like that giant head that's supposed to be like a Spartan or a person or something? I find those very upsetting to look at.
It is troubling. I agree with you. Let's get to a football question. Ken Camaccioni. I'm sure that's how you pronounce his name. If the NFL converted to flag football, would the best teams be the same?
Ooh, that's a fun question. I'm guessing it's going riffing off the Mike Mitchell rant. Did you see that?
Yes.
Okay, so you would think that the teams that would be successful in flag football would be the ones with the best skill players, right? And quarterbacks, I would presume.
Mm-hmm.
So some of them would be the same. No?
Well, I mean, I do, but I think assuming the field is the same size, you would figure speed would play up, right? Because you're not worried about getting big hits. Your quarterbacks are, you know, able to run away more frequently. You don't have to be as worried about staying within the scheme. So I think younger, faster teams would probably be better than they would be in the actual NFL.
Can you imagine playing flag football against Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell? Like, the Steelers would just, yeah, like, I mean, so a lot of the best teams would actually, I think, still be very good. It would hurt teams like you know, well, I mean, Russell Wilson would be very fun in flag football as well, to be honest, because he's so elusive. But it would hurt, I think, the physical, more brutal, you know, gruntier teams.
Gruntier. Can I ask you just a quick question? Who is the gruntiest team in football?
The Ravens, probably.
Yes, that's a good answer. You got that one.
They don't even call plays. They just do different cadences of grunt.
I'm going to let you keep going. I'm not going to stop you on this one. You can, you know what? If that's what you want to do for the next 20 minutes, go nuts. That's very around the horny content, I feel like, here, though.
You have to stop this. All right, moving on. Next question.
Next question. Casino Guru asks, not doesn't ask me, asks Mina specifically, Mina's favorite type of chicken wings.
Yeah. Okay, so I don't know if he means flats or drums or if he's talking about flavor. So I'll answer both, clearly. I like drums. And as far as
That's the
flavor
correct leading to
goes,
answer.
thank you. This is not going to be popular, but I actually prefer barbecue to buffalo. I know.
Wow.
I know that's not the right answer. I don't care. I have to speak my truth.
Sweet versus savory. I find that very troubling. Although, I did see that Buffalo Wild Wings was purchased by the same company that owns Arby's and Cinnabon. And
No, that's not
I
gonna
do
end
feel
well.
like in the next 5 years, there will be a cinnamon bun glazed wing at either of those locations.
Or it means that we can watch football at Cinnabon, which is really the outcome that I want. Just to get together with some pals over Cinnabon and watch, Sunday night football.
Just bring a big Cinnabon to class and just glaze it up and bake it in front of everyone.
Once I got on a wait, this is once I got on a
Okay,
flight
excuse me.
and this woman sat next to me with a Cinnabon that she had purchased at the airport, and she turns to me and goes, "I am really sorry to tempt you with this Cinnabon." And then, first of all, beyond the creepiness of that, I was like, "Lady, like, are you gonna offer me a piece?" And then she just turned around and ate it.
Oh no.
It was the weirdest thing.
There is a classic Grantland Dunnifield podcast story with Robert Mays witnessing someone carrying an entire Sbarro's pizza onto an airplane. And I can only imagine what would have happened. Just taunting the people around him.
What is the weirdest food item you could carry onto an airplane?
Weirdest, you say?
Like
Is it
the
weirdest
most,
or
like
like.
not, no, strangest, not like most upsetting. And like realistic, like
Strangest.
not like fondue, like no one's
Yeah,
bringing a
I'm
fondue
trying to think.
pan.
How long is the flight?
6 hours.
6 hours. Okay, so like a transcontinental flight. What is the weirdest food you could possibly bring on? Maybe like something that's gonna go south very quickly, I would feel like. Maybe like a fried dough, kind of.
A fried dough.
Something really pungent that's like gonna it's gonna smell, it's gonna be you're gonna have to eat it in like the first 10 minutes or it's gonna be gross and you're not gonna want to eat it. Or like a whole rotisserie chicken.
That's happened to me. I got on a flight, an overseas flight to Europe, and this family got on with a rotisserie chicken and ate it, and they shared it. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life.
So
I would go with
weird.
fettuccine carbonara.
Why?
I don't know, it just seems weird. All right, moving on. Next question.
Next question. Anastasis asks, Otani or an offensive line for Russell Wilson?
Oh, shut up. Get out of here. Next question.
You have to answer the question. Shohei Ohtani for the Seattle Mariners or an offensive line for Russell Wilson?
Ohtani.
Really? I find that hard to believe. I thought you were saying shut up, like it was obviously get an offensive line for Russell Wilson.
No, I mean, first of all, the Mariners, the drought is longer. They need it more. I need it more. And the thing is, this is how I'm going to regret saying this. The offensive line is not that far off at this point. They really just need to bolster the right side, right? I really believe that. So I don't think that it's as in as desperate time as it's been in the past.
I feel like we're gonna have a drop where we cut directly from the grunting earlier to that comment about the Seahawks offensive line in the near future. How exciting was it for you to have an around the horn appearance displayed on the big screen at Safeco Field?
That was exciting. Equally exciting was the person who tweeted me, "You were just on there by accident. They weren't promoting you." Thank you. I had no idea. I really appreciated that, random man. Oh, love Twitter.com. Great place. Great dialogue.
Such a great website. Let's
So
ask a
good.
Browns question here. Dem323 asks, how many years will it take the Browns to win 16 games?
That's 8-8, 2 8-8 seasons. I'm gonna
16, one of 15 years.
I'm gonna conservatively say 3.
You think is I would say 3 is my answer as well, but I don't think that's really conservative.
Is it not?
Not really. I
I
mean,
mean,
if they go 6-10 the next 3 years, it'll take 3 years.
I mean, it would be 3 would imply, slow, steady trajectory. But it's to me, that seems more likely than the alternative, which is continued misery. But who knows?
Okay. Dog question for you. Andy McGrath asked, if Lenny, your dog, and Maggie, my dog, were NFL players, which position would they play? And who would you compare their games to?
I'll choose Lenny. You choose Maggie because we know them best.
I have answers for Lenny and Maggie, so.
Oh, really? Interesting. Yes. Okay. Well, I'll go with Lenny first. Lenny. Yeah. So he is extremely, a lot of character, a lot of grit, very feisty, you know, a little bit of a wild card, a little bit of a hothead at time. We're doing position, right? Not player.
But you can do both if you want.
Incredible hops, great size, wingspan. His legs are long for his body. I think he'd be a cornerback.
That's exactly what I have for Lenny.
Yo!
I have great, great leaping ability and very aggressive are my notes on Lenny. My scouting report on Lenny. I said Marcus Peters was my example.
That is a little offensive. I love Marcus Peters, but this is gonna go down a road. Who did you pick for? What did you pick for Maggie?
So I said Maggie, very chill, very consistent, very lazy. Usually not lazy, but like kind of knows what she wants to do. Is very comfortable in her own skin, but once every few months she freaks out and gets into like a rage barking match at the dog park. So I figured AJ Green. Because AJ Green's normally super chill, but then he decides to choke out Jalen Ramsey out of nowhere.
That was the strangest thing. I feel like that's one in a season that's been so crazy. That's one of the like little things we won't remember.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Even though it was absolutely insane that that happened.
It was. So
did
ridiculous.
You see the video of Jalen Ramsey talking about the Seahawks game?
Yes. I love Jalen Ramsey.
He's so entertaining to me. I wish he.
The fact that he went at Steve Smith last year, like it was when I knew he was going to be great.
When people talk about millennials and what they're like, and people say it's a stereotype, I look at Jalen Ramsey. I'm like, no, actually, like this is very accurate.
But he's so good at his job.
And he's good. He's great. Yeah, he's wonderful.
So I have a question, my own mailbag question here. Oh. Someone tweeted yesterday, there was a video of a guy driving around a Hummer with a working TV on the back. I don't know if you saw this.
I did see this, yeah.
He was airing the SEC championship game on a loop because he's in Georgia. He was a Georgia fan, so he was airing the SEC championship game on a loop. This was the greatest thing I've ever seen. So I wanted to ask you, same situation, you're driving on a Hummer, you have a working TV on the back. What are you airing on repeat on the back of your massive car?
The Tip from the 2014 NFC Championship, which I frequently rewatch from time to time, but I think the world would benefit from seeing that a lot. What about you?
That's a good question. I didn't know it was going to come to me.
I'm a journalist.
I might flip it. I might drive around Boston just showing the helmet catch on repeat. I feel like that would
be. You would be
really
rammed into so quickly if you did that.
You know what? It'd be worth it. I think that would be pretty funny. Jackson Marston asks, I know this is a topic that you do have an opinion on, so I wanted to ask you about this. Why are we still using the Tecmo Bowl view for games? It's nice and all, but I wonder what the safeties do sometimes. So I wanted to ask you, of course. We did get to see the end zone camera in a recent Thursday night game. So what are your thoughts on the possible camera change happening in the NFL?
Oh, I'm not sure you get a view of the safeties. So my take on Skycam was that, and, you know, just having watched it, I guess, for teams I care about and teams I don't, is that it's very fun to watch when you're impartial and infuriating when you care about the outcome of a game, because you know what you're losing is the sense of down and distance, right? Or the immediate awareness of that. And when you are rooting for a team or have a rooting interest and you can't immediately apprehend that, it's actually really frustrating. I've found personally, you are impartial always. So I don't know if you've had the same experience as me, but does that make sense to you?
It does. I do feel the same way about it. I think detaching myself from the Giants, not really a bad thing this year. I don't think I want to find out what the down and distance is most times. Just look at it. They're going to allow a touchdown on 3rd and 33 anyway. So what do I care about the down and distance? It doesn't matter. I I liked it, but maybe not as much as I thought I was going to like it. You know,
Yeah.
I do think that it's something has to change about it. I thought that has to be a little higher up so you get a little better view of the down and distance. But, you know, if I go and watch a game from 1995, 1990, for example, on YouTube, which I do sometimes, I don't watch games typically. It's not my thing. I usually just look at numbers. But when I do occasionally lower myself to watching a game, I can watch a game from 1990 and there's no first down marker, and I'm just lost. I'm just like, well, how am I
Yeah.
supposed to know where anything's happening here? And that's easy to tell, let alone from the other perspective. So I do think they have to work on it, but I do think in the long run, behind the quarterback view is going to be the better view. It does need some work still.
They have to figure out how to make us more aware. If I was an offensive lineman, I would be lobbing the NFL so hard because it
Yes.
makes them look so cool and important. And like you really notice blocking schemes and how hard they work and the things that they do. So, yeah, that's the position that I think benefits the most from that view.
Fortunately, the NFL has such a great players union, and specifically the offensive linemen do such a great job of promoting themselves. So we will see. Let's finish. We have a couple more non-football questions to finish up with, and one more football question towards the end.
Okay.
In a Lonely Place asks, and there was no context for this, which is why I wanted to ask it. Is
Wait,
REM
what
an
was the
80s
handle?
band? In a Lonely Place. No name
Love that we're
listed.
taking this question.
Yes. I don't know why it was asked. Is REM an 80s band? Or a 90s band.
This is actually pretty hard because their hits are pretty evenly split between the 80s and 90s, just looking at some of these songs. I'm gonna go 90s because I was cognizant in the 90s of things, and Losing My Religion, I think, is the best song, and that came out in 1991.
That was my exact logic. Losing My Religion is 1991. Everybody Hurts is 1993. I do think, though, they are the band where the highest percentage of my interactions with their songs is through like piano keyboard MIDI versions of the songs I downloaded on America Online in the 90s. So I think that influences my choices.
That's fair. It's the end of the world as we know it, and I Feel Fine came out in 1987, which is probably the second best song for me, but I'm still going to stick with the 90s and because I'm a 90s kid.
Early 90s girl. Obviously.
Hmm.
Two more. Scott Bishop asks, one NFL coach needed for the fast money round in Family Feud. Who are you picking?
Harbaugh.
I'm
Because
surprised. I ch
isn't he the one who like learns a lot of languages and stuff? He just seems smart and
Is that
calm
true?
and not and yeah, John Harbaugh. Am I making that up? I feel like he's like studies languages in his spare time. Let me see.
I'm
Look
looking it
that
up
up.
now.
I'm pretty sure it's true. It might be totally false, but I could have
I'm not
sworn I
seeing
read that
anything
somewhere.
on John Harbaugh and languages in this Google search here.
It feels right. It feels like it could be true.
I don't know that I agree
Anyways,
with you.
who's your answer?
I think John Harbaugh's a smart guy, so I don't think it's the worst choice by any means, but I'm shocked you did not choose Pete Carroll.
Oh
I feel
no,
like
Pete Carroll definitely doesn't seem like widely well read. He reads like self-help books, and no. I love Pete Carroll, but no.
you don't
By
think
the
he
way,
has
I
a
looked up.
breadth of weird knowledge?
No, I don't think so at all. I don't. Pete Carroll. That's not Pete Carroll's strength. Like the weird. I mean, maybe Belichick probably reads like weird history books and stuff.
I'm not sure if you've watched Family Feud recently. They don't get to a lot of weird history. They're not asking about like ask 100 people what your favorite battlefield
Oh
in
right.
the Franco-Prussian War is.
It's like common sense. I'm gonna go with Harbaugh. I really think he'd be good.
Agree to disagree on that one. But we'll finish up. Uncle Eric, not my uncle, not your uncle, but someone's uncle, asks, what would be the funniest NFL playoff scenario? Obviously, it would involve the AFC, but what specifically?
Oh man. Okay, so I've completely ignored the AFC playoffs. just pretended that they don't exist. I've just pretended we will not have to watch an AFC wildcard game. Like it's not going to exist. It's just not going to happen. I'm going to just, it's going to be like a blank space in my knowledge when I go back in time and try to remember. So right now, who's in? Let's see. AFC playoff
We've got the. I also wrote an article
picture.
on this earlier this week, which you could read on ESPN.com. Just saying. Patriots, Steelers,
You write a lot of articles.
Jags, Titans. Ravens as the first wild card, and then or Ravens and the Titans are the wild cards, and then one team out of the Chiefs, Chargers, and Raiders in the AFC West.
Well, this isn't the funniest. The best is the Chargers going all the way, obviously.
Is that true? I don't know that I agree with you.
The Bills somehow squeaking or somehow missing out by one game because of the Nathan Peterman game.
That's also fair. That is definitely on the table.
What do you think?
So I said the Patriots and Steelers both lose in the divisional round. So we end up with the Jacksonville Jaguars hosting the AFC Championship game as the 3 seed against the wild card Baltimore Ravens. So you get Blake Bortles versus Joe Flacco for a chance to make the Super Bowl.
Look at this. I mean, I'm just like looking. Okay, so on one side, you've got, this is the wild card side. You've got the Panthers, Seahawks, Saints, and Rams. On the other side, you have the Ravens, Jaguars, Chiefs, and Titans. That is freaking insane. Like, this has to be the most lopsided. I mean, I know they're 20-20 or something, and you can quantify this, but just, like, the eye test, I cannot remember this discrepancy being as wide.
What about when the Seahawks? This season. What about the 7-9 Seahawks making the playoffs? Or seven? Were they 7-8-1?
They were 7-9, and I think we all know that that generated the greatest run in NFL history and was completely worth it. So, okay, so here's my question to you. Of the Ravens, Jags, Titans, and Chiefs, who is the most fun for you to watch?
I think the Jags.
Jags, yeah.
I think the Jags, just because their defense is genuinely so great and their offense is still pretty bad. Like, I enjoy that thing where something is wrong and yet people like clearly pat themselves on the back for it. And I feel like if Blake Bortles wins a playoff game, we're going to get to that point where people are like, yeah, I knew Blake Bortles was good all along. I had never bought that he was crappy. And it's like, no, he was bad. And he still kind of is bad, but their defense is a lot better now. So I like seeing people talking themselves into mistakes. And I feel like that would happen with a Jags playoff run with Blake Bortles at quarterback.
Yeah, I hate talking about these teams, man. Like the Titans, I had to talk about the Titans recently. And it's just brutal.
By the way, 2010, Seahawks win the division at 7-9. In the other conference, you have the Jets at 11-5 and the Ravens at 12-4 as wild card teams. Chargers at 9.
So much better back then, Bill. QBs were awesome, and they stink now.
The Chargers at 9-7 did not make the playoffs.
Do you think the Chargers are going to do it? You're part of Chargers Town.
I'm like the... I was there a couple of years ago. Like, I'm not even like the holier than thou hipster. I'm like the early adopter who couldn't take the heat and had to leave. Like, I just I get that sick feeling when I think about the Chargers.
I picked the Chargers to win every one of their first four games that they all lost, and so I don't know what that, but, and then I continue to believe in them on and off and have picked them here and there. And I don't know what, and have been, they're good. But also I expect them to lose all the time. I don't know what that makes me in Chargers Town. Cause Will Brinson's the mayor.
Yes.
There's a lot of us out here in the football mainstream media. A lot of Chargers.
MSM. We all watch Chargers. We don't watch anyone else but the Chargers is the problem. Do you think they're any better now than they were the first four games of the year? Like, has something actually changed, or is it just that they're a little luckier and maybe they're playing worse competition?
The offense looks better to me. I actually have watched their last two games, and I think sometimes when that offense is clicking, it looks really good. I mean, Keenan Allen looks awesome. And it's not that he wasn't awesome at the beginning of the season, but he's making plays now that he wasn't. So I think that their offense looks better than it did before.
Yeah, Phillip Rivers, that offense has not turned the ball over in three consecutive games. I read about this on Monday. I think it's happened once before in his entire tenure with the Chargers. So
I want Phillip Rivers in the playoffs so bad. And not just for the memes, but mostly for the memes.
The memes are really a strong part of why you want him in the playoffs, though. I would love a Chargers-Raiders play-in game on Christmas Eve, December 31st, or Christmas Eve, New Year's Eve, December 31st. I feel like that would be a very entertaining Sunday night game for the AFC West.
The The thing with Rivers is, like, his face is so gif-able, but we're really just using the same gifs over and over at this point. Like, we're going back to the same well, and they're still good, but it's getting kind of tired. It's like at that point where you're like, oh, like, I love this band. These hits are amazing. I listen to them over and over, but I really need a new song. I just really need, like, a new Rivers face of celebration, like a fist pump to come out of this playoffs run.
What would be the funniest team for him to lose to in the playoffs if they get there?
Oh, God. Probably the Chiefs.
Aw, that would be so sad, though.
Yeah. I mean, the Rav-Iton Jag Chiefs, it's just one amorphous blob team. Come on. Sorry, everyone's listening.
All right. So, Mina Kimes, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Where can people check out more of your work?
Well, I'm on Around the Horn tomorrow, and I think probably next week at some point. So watch Around the Horn.
That's it? You have 18 other
Twitter
things you do for ESPN.
I'm on Twitter at Mina Kimes. What?
You have like 18
no,
other
I'm
things
not,
you do for ESPN.
Yeah. I put it all on my Twitter at Mina Kimes. You can check it out there.
You have another podcast that went up today that you're not even plugging.
Oh, yeah, right. I got a tweet about that. And it features a long monologue about the Browns. You might want to not listen to that.
Yeah, if you listen to this show, no point. But Nickel Package up every week. Mina and Dominique Foxworth host the Thursday show. I'm on Wednesdays. So check that out. But Mina Kimes, thank you so much for hopping on the show today.
No problem.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode of The Bill Barnwell Show. Coming back next week, two more shows, and of course, the Nick Package on Wednesday. So, usual week next week, more football coming. Thanks so much for listening.